but I gotta get these kids and I gotta get the hell out of here.
I get to her bed, finally. Feels like it takes me 5 minutes to get there. I pick her up and she's unconscious.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. My guest this week is the queen of hustle herself, the host of the Hustlin' in Heels podcast, Stacy Carlin. Stacy and I talk about what it means to be a hustler and where her hustle has come from. It was a great conversation, and we talk about a little bit of everything, from a life-altering medical condition to an eye-opening, life-changing moment that will never be forgotten. And one thing's for sure, after listening to this episode, you'll see why Stacy's the queen of hustle. If you're done with the episode, pop over to Apple Podcasts, give us a rate and review, and after you do that, make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you don't listen in Apple Podcasts, subscribe in whatever your favorite podcast app is. Also, you can always stay connected with us on social media, on Facebook at facebook.com/madeuspodcast, or on Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. And if you have a guest suggestion, drop us a line at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. And if you like today's conversation, make sure to check out the ladies of MBI Studios. Their show's Hustlin' in Heels. So one thing's for sure, I really enjoyed this conversation. There are moments that really made me laugh. There are moments that made me see why Stacy's such a hustler. And there's one moment in particular, as a parent, that absolutely made me sick to my stomach. And Stacy's story is an incredible one. So I'll stop talking, and please let me welcome the queen of hustle, Stacy Carlin. Stacy, thanks for joining me tonight.
You are welcome. I'm excited to be here in the studio.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. This is fun. And it's a little weird for you, I'm sure, because this is the same studio you use.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the wrong side.
And you're sitting on the wrong side. And I literally did this 4 or 5 weeks ago when I interviewed Bob, and yeah. I had to sit on the wrong side and interview him.
Same. He made me sit over here because he said he was the only one that could sit in the Big Daddy chair during an interview. What an ass.
Yeah, what an ass.
He's our ass, though.
Yeah, he is our ass. He is off in Ireland right now wearing a kilt. Did you see the photo?
I'm so jealous about this trip right now.
Yeah, I just shared his photo on social media across all of our platforms of him doing a speech in a kilt.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
You know, when you go to Ireland, you have to do whatever they do there, which is probably drink a bunch of beer, which is probably why he's in a kilt.
That sounds about right. That's our Bob. So let's tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I currently am in the field of public relations and marketing for a financial institution, which essentially means that I get to be out in the community and tell people why they should come join our institution.
Okay.
And tell them how cool we are and show how we support the community. So I get to take part in a lot of different events, which is fun. Who doesn't love that?
Oh, yeah.
And any communication really that comes out of our financial institution comes through our department. So that's my day job. And then I have a couple of different side hustles.
Yeah.
I am the host of Hustlin' in Heels podcast, which is also a podcast of NBI Studios. We're the girls of the studio. We're the girly podcast. Although we're not super girly, 20% of our listenership are men. So
yeah, I have to say that I've listened to episodes and I've got really into them.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So you say you're the girly podcast. And I know that's kind of like, it sounds like it's the girly podcast, but it's not really just for women.
No, it's not. I mean, we really cover a lot of universal themes that are, you know, just part of the human condition and part of human nature. So that is where I think everybody can connect on the same level. Is it called Hustlin' in Heels? Yeah, that's just really because that's what we do.
Yeah.
My co-host Angie and I, we're both in PR and marketing, and we wear heels during the week. We hustle around. We do all kinds of stuff during the day and at night. But then on Thursday nights, we get to come sit in the studio and we get to talk to other people who are kind of living the hustle and talk about it from their perspective. But our guests and our listeners wear all kinds of shoes. So boots, tennis shoes.
Hustlin' in Heels just flats. Is catchier than hustling in work boots.
I like alliteration.
Yeah, it's nice.
So, plus, we got to have this really pretty logo that was created for us by Shane Yoder that involved pink high heels. So
yeah, it was awesome.
That's why I went with it.
The theme song is awesome, too.
Also from Shane Yoder, putthemintosong.com. Thank you. Yeah, I've told this story before. When we started our podcast, I sent an email to Shane because Bob said, all right, send him an idea of what you are thinking about. Now, I'm not a musical person at all. So my email literally said, hey, Shane, here's what I'm thinking. I need something that sounds feminine but badassy. Like maybe like you're walking into a boardroom, but not in like a bitchy kind of way. Like I just typed out this whole stream of consciousness. And then within like an hour, he sent me that song. I didn't change a thing. So
yeah, I have nailed to say it. He nailed mine too. Mm-hmm. Shane Yoder, putthemintheSong.com. Yeah, I sent him the same thing. Email. I sent him, hey, this is kind of what I'm looking for. Yeah. I in particular had a clip that I sent him. We were real into this show called Medici. It was a Netflix show. Mm. And I love their intro music.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, I love this. Doesn't have to be this, but like this concept. And it, again, just nails absolutely it. Nails I know. It. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So you said you got a couple side hustles.
So that's one side hustle. I used to sell real estate in the past. That was another side hustle. I've since stepped away from that and put my license in referral just because I don't really have a ton of time outside of what I do now. I'm pretty active in my community, so I run a lot of the events in my beloved hometown of Buchanan. I serve on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. So we do a lot of cool stuff there, so that takes up some additional amount of my time. I also help my family with a website that they've created called Fire Keepers Memories, which is a pretty cool site where you can go and really record your family's story. So it's kind of like the next version of Facebook, but it's really focused on the idea of collecting memories.
Okay, that sounds really neat.
Yeah, so I do that. And then I happen to have three little ones at home that keep me hustling all the time.
Yeah,
so.
they'll keep you going. I've got two personally.
Yeah, yeah,
so.
Yeah, so, you know, it's busy.
Yeah, you sound like a super busy person.
Yeah. Oh, and sometimes I do other, you know, marketing stuff for just finished recording a video for the Lake Michigan Shore Wine Trail.
That sounds, everything I know about you, that sounds right up your alley.
It was great. Yeah. Lauren and Mel, Lazy Ballerina Winery, contacted me and said, hey, you know, we're going to start this project where we'd really like to market the wineries along this shore. Are you interested? So it essentially involved drinking wine and talking about how great their winery was with a professional film crew, and they're going to make it into a cool video, and hopefully we'll do more along the way. So every day is a different hustle.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And that is actually why I brought you here today.
Yeah.
Was to talk about this hustle.
Yeah.
You are clearly awesome at this and push it out there. But where did the hustle come from?
Good question. I think honestly, I really think it's kind of always been there.
Yeah.
You know, I talk to hustlers on my show a lot, and that seems to be a common theme. You know, if there's that energy level and that drive and passion, that tends to spark at a young age.
Yeah.
And I think largely for me, it was a result of seeing parents who were innovative and ambitious, and we didn't have a lot. You know, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents were high school sweethearts. They met in Future Farmers of America class.
Okay.
And they got married right after high school. And then my dad was a truck driver. And my mom was a secretary at the middle school. But my dad always had different ideas.
Yeah.
He was just an entrepreneur by heart. And so, you know, every year there'd be a different idea for a different business or a different thing that we can make or a different way to kind of do a side hustle. So I grew up watching my dad have all these side hustles. Some of them panned out, some of them didn't, but that's the great thing. You know, when you are an entrepreneur, you just have to fail a bunch.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's, if you aren't reaching where you're wanting to go, like, don't be afraid to just continue to put yourself out there and fail, because that's how you learn, obviously. And it's going to happen a bunch of times, and then you're going to, you know, you're going to strike out sometimes, but
yeah,
you're also going to hit some,
you know,
hit
one
some
of the
dingers. So
one of the best things I ever heard about that, and it's not necessarily just about hustling, but it's that concept of working and trying, no matter what mm-hmm. it is. If you fail, you fail. But it's like, if you're out to do something, try to get 100 no's.
Yeah.
Because out of those 100 no's, someone's going to say yes.
Yeah.
You know, don't focus on that. Focus on getting 100 no's. Mm-hmm. Because over those 100 no's, you're going to get some yeses. And mm-hmm. someone's going to work with you.
Yep. Absolutely. If you're not hearing no, you're not asking enough.
That is true. That is very true.
But I think that is a foreign concept for a lot of people, because it can sometimes be very uncomfortable. I learned a long time ago that the worst thing they can say is no, and then you're in the same boat you were before you asked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So might as well put it out there because there's always a chance. And people respect ambition and people respect others who have the guts to ask for what they want. Doesn't mean you're going to get it, but you might.
Never
going to know until you put it out there. So I think that was a lesson I learned pretty quickly on in life. And I was able to do so because my parents, even though we didn't have a ton, we had just a great support system. So who cares about money if you have a great support system of love and hard work?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so that was always present there for me. So I knew that if I was a jumper, if I tried, that I wouldn't hit the ground and, you know, a big splat. I knew that there was a little bit of a safety net there. So that my parents and my family, my support group always provided for me. So, you know, if it all went to hell, I could at least go home, sleep on the couch, and figure shit out.
For sure. And that's awesome to see your parents kind of instill that into you, whether they did it on purpose or whether you just picked it up, you know, subconsciously.
Yeah.
That's neat to have that beginning like that. How early on did you kind of see that hustle start that you remember?
I think I always had ideas. I grew up in a family where there were always ideas were free. So you could just think of ideas and see if you could pull them off. I mean, certainly from like the traditional lemonade stand and whatever. Yeah, we did that. But there were, I don't know, there were just always different ideas to try new things and try different things. I remember when I was probably 12. I had an idea to do this. I called it Man on the Street.
Man on the Street.
I walked into the newspaper and I said, hey, what I want to do is I want to pick a question of the week.
Okay.
And I want to go around and I want to ask people in town what the question is. And I'll take their picture and I'll put their answer in the newspaper. It could be like a weekly feature.
Yeah.
Are you interested? And how much money will you pay me to do that? And they were interested and they paid me money to do that. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. So that was pretty cool. That was like one of my first side hustles. And what I learned about that is, I guess what skill that gave me is not being afraid to go up and talk to people, you know? And I've never had a lack of confidence in that area, which is good. You know, I don't really have stage fright or anything like that, but it takes a different skill to kind of go up to people and ask them questions or, you know, even as you're a young kid. But I credit that skill. And I think that's what has helped propel me a little bit through life is even if you have that feeling of, I don't know, it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just getting over it and doing it anyways. Just kind of getting past that uncomfort level, I think is helpful. So yeah,
I definitely have that same, you know, so mine isn't necessarily like the stage fright.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily enjoy talking to people for the longest time. When I started tattooing, that changed because I had to.
I had no choice.
You're stuck with a person for hours on end.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
You either talk or you're super uncomfortable. You know, so I've become proficient at talking to people just because I have no choice. And that's kind of a lot of things that I do. You know, I don't necessarily have the hustle that you have as far as creating businesses and doing those things. Like, I do a lot, but my goal is always to do the best at whatever I can. You know, I pick up a lot of strange things. I tattoo. So I was told that that's not something I should do. So what do? I go balls to the wall and do the best that I can possibly do.
Yeah. Open up a company.
Yeah. At some point, I started shooting. And that was like, that's not a thing you can do. Well, now I'm going to put my heart out there and do the best I can do. Then it's like podcasting. Like, I want to do that. Now I'm nowhere near what podcasting could be, but I'm going to put my heart into it and try the best I can. And that's always been my philosophy is just work. Just do the best you can. I have a tattoo on the side of my hands that says all or nothing. And that's kind of the way I live my life is I'm going to do whatever I do to the fullest, no matter what it is. And that's kind of where I am. It's a little different than your hustle, you know, but it's still hustling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, to talk about those common themes, I think a lot of people who do have that hustle bone, you know, or that hustle gene, they do that. I mean, they pick something and they pour their ambition into it, or they pour their heart into it, or they pour their mind into it, because it takes some guts to jump and try these new things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're going to do it, why do it half-assed? Because then what are you getting out of that? Just a waste of time, really. So, I mean, I think that speaks volumes about who you are as a person, you know, to put that much effort into anything that you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't here to talk about me. I just got in there.
I know, but I host a podcast and I can't help myself.
So where did the idea of the podcast come from?
Well, so I my former co-host and I had talked about doing a podcast, but we had talked about doing it actually for the institution we work for.
Okay.
Well, we sat down to lunch one day and we started writing down the topics we thought we'd talk about. And we noticed that we were getting more excited about topics that weren't necessarily about finances.
Yeah.
And then we were like, you know what? What if we just did our own podcast? We're two professional women. What do other women want to hear about? You know, they want to hear about how do you balance family and work and other life commitments? What are the common themes of struggles and successes that women have in their lives? So we just started writing down topics. Well, I knew Bobby, grew up with him.
Yeah.
We're both from Buchanan. I know he goes by Bob, but I knew Bobby when he was from Buchanan. And so I actually just reached out to him and said, hey, I know you're pretty successful in what you do. Can I just stop by and pick your brain? Like, yeah. I just want to know what type of equipment do you use? What recommendations do you have? How do I jump in? Because I'm a jumper.
Yeah.
And so we came here and we talked to him and, you know, got some information about different types of equipment. And then we left and I got an email from him that said, hey, I love the concept. I love the idea. I think this has the potential to be something that's pretty cool. Would you consider joining MBI Studios? So that's kind of how it happened. Through Michael and Bobby saying, hey, you guys want to jump in? And of course, you know, of course we took that opportunity. And like you, I mean, we're doing all right. I love our podcast. I think we have great reviews and ratings. We did pretty well for the first season. But just like you, like I want to keep going. Yeah. I want to see what else we can do. So we've definitely in season two, we've expanded our audience a little bit. We've expanded the format a little bit. It's not all about women. And
okay.
we actually have quite a few guy listeners and some guy guests lined up, because the whole idea of hustling is just like, hey, what are you doing out there to make it happen in whatever field you're in?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no need to pigeonhole it like mm-hmm. that. You know, yeah. I get where you're going. You mm-hmm. know, you had that demographic in mind.
Yeah.
But
and we still do a little bit.
Yeah.
But well, we want to make it bigger.
But hustlers come in all shapes,
they
sizes,
do.
Colors, sex. It doesn't matter.
They do. They do.
Yeah.
And that's what we've learned. Not that we didn't know that before, but we've learned, I guess we thought in the beginning that only women would want to hear about it.
Yeah.
And what we learned is that men wanted to hear about it too. And so I was, you know, like I kept getting feedback from guys saying, all right, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to listen to this, but I really like it. And like I connect on that too, because we don't just talk about like women things, you know, but
yeah.
I guess we come at our discussions from that perspective.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And how can you not? I mean, that's life.
I mean, that's who I am.
Yeah, exactly. So with your podcast, is there anything that you've learned through this? You know, has there been a guest that's really like changed your mind on a topic or really opened your eyes to something?
All of the guests really have been amazing for different reasons. I guess the common thing that I've learned is that everybody has a story.
Absolutely.
If you only just ask.
Yep.
And so that's what I love about it, because every week I throw the headphones on and I start talking and I think I'm going to go in this direction. And without fail, there's always a curveball in there that I don't see coming, that, you know, this thing has made an impact on this person's life, or they tell this story where, you know, where it just kind of goes somewhere a little bit different. And it just really hits home to me that there's this danger of, you know, looking at a person and seeing them in public and knowing what they do and kind of assuming that you know what their life is
yeah.
like. And really, like, that danger of a single story, like you've crafted the single story about this person in your head.
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually sit down with them and talk to them about their experiences, you're going to find that multiple stories make up their lives.
Oh, absolutely.
And it just really expands my view about just humankind in general. You know, there really aren't any one-dimensional people. You just have to take the time to listen to people and get to know them. And I love inspirational stories. I used to be a history teacher for 10 years.
Were you really?
I was. Another hustle. Yeah. So that's what I went to school for, to be a teacher.
Really?
So,
you've done everything.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it.
I was a world history teacher and a law teacher for 10 years.
Where'd you teach at?
I taught at Buchanan High School.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And before that, I was an election specialist for the state of Michigan, where I traveled around the state of Michigan and I taught local clerks and elected officials how to run elections.
Really?
And my team was in charge of all the recounts across the whole state. So that was fun. I got to come up with a proposal to rewrite the education training system for the whole state of Michigan and submitted that to the Pew Foundation for Charitable Trust. And we got a grant. I got to travel to New York City. So that was kind of fun.
That sounds fun and super nerve-wracking all at the same time.
And super nerdy.
And a little nerdy.
I was an election law specialist. And so that was fun too. And then before that, I actually lived and worked out in D.C. for a while. So it's been... You know, I've kind of been all over the place. I worked in civic education out there with this inspirational group called the Close Up Foundation. And every week I would get 20 different students from all across the nation, sometimes all across the world. And I would teach them about the legislative process in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I'd take them to meet their senator or we'd watch Congress in action.
Oh, that's really awesome.
It was sweet.
That's awesome.
It was shit for pay. And the hours were about 80 hours a week. But wow. When you are brand new out of college and you're working with other people who are brand new out of college and your mind is full of inspirational thoughts about saving the world and educating the masses, like, you don't give a shit. You'll work for pennies because you're working with people you believe in and a cause you believe in. And then you're going to use all those pennies. You're going to go out and have beer afterwards anyway. Yeah. So it was like a fantastic job.
That kind of takes you back to what you said earlier, too, is it's not always about that money.
It's not.
You know, it's about doing something that you you love and doing something you have firm beliefs in. And that sounds exactly what that is really putting yourself out there, even though, you know, well, maybe at that time you didn't realize you weren't making any money.
Oh, I knew it.
Oh, you knew it then?
I loved what I was doing.
Yeah, you knew that you were making a difference, too. Yeah. And that's a huge deal. You've done a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You're all over the place.
All over the place. I guess to me, it's about living that jumping mentality.
Yeah.
I talk all about this. My friends know this. Like my catchphrase, right? Like, this is not my practice life. I'm not sitting around and just waiting for things to happen.
Like, yeah.
You get one shot. You get one at bat at this life. So it's up to you what you want to do with it. And I think it's important to do things that you love and do things that inspire you and do things that make this world a better place. And then when those things aren't working for you anymore or you've exhausted that avenue or that road, then you find a new one.
No, it makes perfect sense. And you said you call it your catchphrase.
Uh-huh.
Now, I did hear another catchphrase from you that I've never heard from anybody. And that's, you talked about building your tribe.
Yeah.
Which I find fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Where did that concept come from?
You know, that's very Pinteresty of me, building your tribe. Like, there's this whole, like, culture on Pinterest of, like, your vibe attracts your tribe. And it's very, like...
Well, I'll stop you right there. I stay way the hell away from
that's
Pinterest.
That's why you haven't heard that shit.
I stay way away from it. Because the only time I ever see Pinterest is when somebody brings me a super shitty tattoo idea.
Oh.
That's like, here's my Pinterest page of these...
I got my super shitty tattoo idea from Pinterest.
Do people know you have a tattoo?
I don't know.
Well, they do now.
My tattoo is awesome.
See, I was not going to say that, and you just threw it out there.
Oh, I'm proud of my tattoo. I love it.
Okay, I didn't know if anybody knew that you had a tattoo.
You know, select few.
So
it's just one. It's just a little one.
You're another one of my guests that I've tattooed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the great thing was, like, I've been talking about getting this tattoo for a while, and finally... It all just kind of came together. I was going to be in St. Joe for a work thing, and I had the afternoon off and messaged you, and it just so happens, like, I don't know how you had that small, minute time off, because you're always booked from, like, weeks in advance.
Yeah, right now it's about 2 months.
2 months in advance, yeah. So it I felt like it was fate.
It was.
And so my tattoo is a Spartan helmet.
Yep.
And that's from my other hustle, even though I pay for this hustle.
We all have those.
So I run Spartan races, and last year my goal was to complete the Spartan trifecta. So for those of you who don't know what a Spartan race is, it's an obstacle course race. So kind of like Tough Mudder, but different. It's a little bit more military style in background. If you can't do an obstacle, you have to do 30 burpees, which sucks.
Yeah.
So anyways, I set a goal in January, complete the Spartan trifecta, which is you have to do the three different levels of the Spartan. There's like a sprint, a super, and a beast.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to bore listeners with what the details are. You can look those up. But I told myself if I finished the trifecta, if I did all three, I would get a Spartan helmet tattoo.
That's awesome. And you did it.
I did it.
So let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many people know this. I don't know how many of your listeners know this. You are type 1 diabetic.
Yep.
And obviously this heavy physical activity like this has to take a toll on your body.
It does.
How much does that play into your mind when you're doing this type of stuff?
It has to be at the forefront of my mind. I always call it my extra obstacle for the Spartan race. So to take it back a little bit, I wasn't always a diabetic. A type 1 diabetic, I kind of got it in a unique way. So when I was pregnant with my first child, he is now 10, so I've had it for 10 years.
Okay.
I became gestational diabetic.
Which isn't super uncommon.
Not uncommon, right? And all the doctors told me, as soon as you deliver him, you'll go back to normal. It's just diabetes during the pregnancy phase. So it was a rough pregnancy. Like, I gained a total of 8 pounds. Like, I was really strict with myself on making sure I was healthy and, like, eating a really good diet. And I didn't have to do insulin or anything like that. And I delivered him. And I remember my mom brought me this giant chocolate milkshake after I delivered him, because I was like, all I want is, like, something super sugary and ice creamy. So had that. Well, for the next 5 months, and then they said, yeah, you're fine. Just go back to normal life. For the next 5 months, I lost 30 pounds. I started not being able to see. I was drinking like a ridiculous amount of Gatorade and milk every day.
Oh, wow.
It was awful. And I was teaching at the time, and I started not being able to read the papers that I was trying to grade, which for the students, they were probably like, sweet.
Yeah, but I can imagine that really is
messing with you psychologically. Yeah. So I went back to the doctor, and long story short, they tested me again, ended up my blood sugar was just off the charts high. I should have been in a coma. So when I did the readings, they were like, yeah, you need to get to the hospital right now. So spent a week in the hospital, and they said that I had turned into a type 1 diabetic, which happens to about 1% of women.
Wow.
Who are gestational diabetic.
And I'll tell you what,
I'm a lucky bastard.
That's scary too. Mm-hmm. If they immediately go, you need to go to the hospital now, that's terrifying.
Yeah. And all the doctors there were like, we're not sure why you're not in a coma right now, but you know, you're not. You're alive, you're walking, so that's good. And I was pretty relieved actually, because I was pretty sick for those 5 months, to finally figure out why and get on a path. And so, you know, as any hustler would do, it's like, all right, what do I got to do? What do I got to do to get control of this and to move forward? And so that was 10 years ago. So fast forward to now, I'm on an insulin pump. The difference between type 2 and type 1, type 2, your body is resistant to insulin. So even though you're producing it, you know, your body's not really responding to it. Type 1, you're fucked. Your body just stops making insulin.
Oh, no.
So you have to give it to yourself somehow. Some people inject it. Other people wear insulin pumps like I do, where there's a continuous stream of insulin running through my body. And then anytime I eat, I just have to get myself a little bit extra. There's no cure. It doesn't matter if I just work out and exercise and eat well, which I try to do. That doesn't matter. My body just doesn't make it. So,
but if you make it part of your life, it's nothing.
I mean, it's, again, there are lots of people out there living with all kinds of challenges. This is just mine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody has something that they're dealing with. It could be way worse.
Yeah.
I have the ability to get up every day and run and do whatever I want. So it's just an extra challenge. So when it comes to the Spartan race, that's certainly an extra challenge. And I run with a super cool fanny pack, and I put all of my supplies in there. And every hour, because some of these races take 5 hours to complete.
Holy cow.
The one I signed up for in this upcoming April takes 10 hours to complete. It's an ultra.
How many obstacles is that?
30 miles, 60 obstacles.
That's mind-blowing.
It's stupid.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So that one, I mean, yeah, I had to carry. And a lot of obstacles are like water obstacles. So I can't get all my shit, you know, wet. So you have to wrap everything up. No, I do them, but I have to wrap everything up in like plastic baggies. And then I put them in my fanny pack.
Yeah.
That way it doesn't get messed up. And then every hour I stop and I check and I see if I need to get myself more sugar or if I need to like pump myself full of insulin. So again, it's just everybody has something they're dealing with. This is just mine.
Now, you have multiple children, correct?
I have three.
So when
that I know of.
That you know of. That's awesome. I don't know how you can, but.
All right. Yeah. Guys use that joke all the time.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot different for us. It's a whole lot different for us. Yeah. So when it came time to have your second child.
Yeah.
Was that an issue, at least maybe not physically, but mentally?
Mm-hmm. Well, physically too. It got harder every time. You know, when you first get diagnosed, there's like a honeymoon period where you think you're smashing it. Like you're killing it. You're like, this shit's easy. I don't even know why people complain. That lasts about a year or two.
Yeah.
And then your body is like, just kidding. This is really how it works. You really don't have a ton of control. Well, you do, kind of.
Yeah.
So with every kid, it got a little bit harder. With my second one, It was a little bit more difficult. With my third one, it just kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And she was born and kind of had some issues just because I was really high. My sugar level was really high. I wasn't high like that. not that time. And so not when she was born, because I had... I'm really, really allergic to poison ivy.
Oh, no.
And, like, 3 weeks before she was born, I got it. I had it all over, like, in my eyes and my ears everywhere.
How'd you manage that?
It was awful. I don't know. I don't even know. Like, I don't know if I, like, looked at it wrong or something. So I was on three different types of steroids to make sure blood sugar go through the roof. So okay. She, like, gained a pound. When she was born, the doctor, she was, like, almost 10 pounds. And the doctor was like, oh, you delivered a moose, which is not funny. It's not a funny thing to say to a woman.
No, I can imagine it's not funny.
I mean, it was kind of funny, but... So, yeah. So, with every baby, it was a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
And, but whatever. Like...
Did you ever have that moment, like that crossroad moment where you're like, obviously, you're not going to give up. But did you ever have that moment in your mind where you're kind of like, you know, I'm over this. This shit sucks.
Nope.
No?
No, because what choice do I have?
You're right.
Like, either I take care of it and live, or I don't take care of it and die. Doesn't seem like much of a choice.
Nope, you're right.
You know,
right.
And I have three kids who are depending on me. You know, I'm not that much of a sissy girl to back down to something like this. So.
Oh, I love that answer. And yeah. You talk about having a quote-unquote moose of a child.
Uh-huh.
My children were both 10, 6, and 9, 15.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God bless your wife.
Yeah. And she was... borderline right there with that stuff as well.
Yeah.
They never said she needed to do anything. She kind of took care of it with diet.
Yep.
But she was right there as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And they knew it when we just having those big babies, they knew that there was something going on there.
Yeah, it's really weird how your body works like that. Like, it's just, you know, sometimes something can trigger it, you know, and either it'll kind of go dormant again, or I don't know.
Yeah. It is what it is, for sure.
It is.
No, I fully get it. And you know what? That was honestly, when you said that, that was the answer I wanted from you, was this answer of,
yeah,
of course not. Of course I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all we can do is fight.
Yeah. Again, I mean, it goes back to the whole, this ain't your practice life. Like, what are you going to take advantage of the opportunities that you have and take on each day with, you know, energy and excitement and being grateful that you woke up above ground and not underground? Or are you going to bitch and moan about it? Like, it doesn't mean that you don't have bad days. Everybody has bad days,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But bad days don't mean you have a bad life, you know? So it's, to me, it's always been, to go back to that tribe thing, I surround myself with people who would lift me up if I needed it. And then I do the same for them. So if you have that support group, you can take on anything, you know, you can be a warrior if you have that support group.
Absolutely.
So I think that helps out a lot. And then just... you'd be amazed what you can do if you just have a little bit of grit and just go out there and take on the day. So
yeah, headstrong.
Yeah, my family will call me stubborn and a pain in the ass, but I like headstrong.
Mm-hmm. Headstrong. I think headstrong is a whole lot better than stubborn and a pain in the ass.
All mean the same thing, but yes, correct.
It does all kind of mean the same thing. Mine's a little politer, maybe.
Yes, yes, I think so. I'm, yeah, I have never been accused of having too much of a filter, so.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. So after all of this is said and done, on your typical day-to-day life, you know, being a hustler, what's your typical day-to-day life now?
There is no typical day, which is what I love about my life. There are work responsibilities, but also when you're dealing in public relations, sometimes you have to react or respond to other things. So I might go into the day with a plan, but then I have to get a press release out about something that happened, or we have to respond to a review or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So there's always things that we have to be ready to respond to.
So it sounds like your days are pretty fluid.
They are. And then there's different events and there's different... You know, there's just a multiple aspects of my job, which I love. And being active in the community, there's typically something, you know, a couple times a month for that. And then there's a podcast, and then there's children to run to practices. There's laundry to do still. It's not like the laundry does itself. And, you know, you got to fit in time there for hobbies. I love to hunt. Big time hunter. And I also like to run races, and I like to drink wine, and I... enjoy seeing people that I want to see and hanging out. And, you know, so there is no real typical day.
So you just sound like you're the queen of hustle. You might not like that term, but I'm going to call you that, the queen of hustle.
I feel like I have to do like a 70s dance to go along with that.
So if anybody wants to get, you know, hear your show, get in contact with you, how can they do that?
So you can find Hustlin' and Heels on all platforms at HIH Pod. You can email us at letschat@hihpod.com. Find us on iTunes, anywhere you get your podcast. Website is hihpod.com. And my personal cell phone number is, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that would not be good.
Yeah, no. Don't be texting me asking me for dates. The answer is no.
Yeah, I don't give my personal cell phone number to anybody. Now that we actually talk about that, I very rarely give my personal cell phone number to anybody because it terrifies me. Because most people want to ask me about tattoos, and they have no tact about it whatsoever.
All right, so give me an example.
So I'll get text messages in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from people that I believed wouldn't do this. You know, like,
really?
Hey, man, what about this? You know, you're like, no, absolutely. Like, this is not the appropriate way. Or you'll have people that come into the shop and they're like, well, just give me your number. I'm like, nope, you can email me or you can call the shop. Like, you're.
Why do you think people do that?
I don't know.
Is it like, do they think it's a little bit less formal of a, you know?
I don't know. Some people have this false narrative of friendships.
Ah.
I think is the deal. And I definitely, this is going to sound like a huge asshole when I say this, and I truly don't mean it, but in the tattoo process, I'm a large part of their process because they're getting a tattoo from me. Everything around this tattoo revolves around me.
Yep.
When I tattoo them, they don't realize that I've tattooed for the people that day and that they're just a part of my day. Now, I try to give each person the best of me that I can do, but they have to understand that that is just a part of my day. Whereas, like, I'm a large part of that. So then they have this extra connection to me that I don't want to say I don't have to them, but I don't have to them.
Yeah.
I'll see somebody in the store that will come up to me and talk to me, and I genuinely wish I could remember who they were, but I can't because I can't remember every person that I've ever dealt with. You know, we figured I've tattooed almost 15 years, and I've probably done 15,000 tattoos once it's all said and done.
Yeah.
I can't remember that many people.
No.
No matter how
Nor
hard
would
I
you
try.
Want to.
Yeah. So
some of them you would love to forget.
So you have, yeah. Oh, yes. We had one of those recently, as a matter of fact, which I will tell you off the air.
Oh,
but
good.
We had one of those recently, but
that's for our premium member. So if you're interested in purchasing a subscription to.
So that's it. You know, I'll have this person that I tattooed one time 5-6 years ago that, again, I'm a big part of their process. They clearly remember me, but it was 5 or 6 years ago for a half an hour tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
That I've spent hours and hours and hours on other people. So I think people build that false narrative of this friendship that they think they have. And I think that's kind of where that lies of asking for something like that.
That makes sense. Yeah. At inappropriate times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a way weird tangent.
No, but that makes sense though. Like I get that about that. And I bet the reason why they think it, honestly, is because there's some type of intimacy that is probably created when one person has a tattooing instrument in their hand and the other person is laying down on the table. It's kind of like the whole, like, nurses, patients, you know, doctor, patient. Like, there is some level of, like, breaking down of barriers a little bit, or you're kind of inside their bubble and it's not, like, typical polite norms, right? And so they probably feel from that experience, like, a little bit of a sense of connection.
Yeah. That sounds almost like the Stockholm syndrome.
I'm just saying. That's my 2-cent opinion. I have zero training and knowledge background in psychology, but doesn't mean that can't be the next career.
Perfect. That's your next hustle.
Just kidding.
No, I get the bubble thing, though, I get, because I have zero bubble, but it's from tattooing for 15 years. You're constantly in somebody else's space. You're constantly touching somebody else.
Yes.
It's just, so for that, for me, it's just isn't a thing anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I try very hard to understand that not everybody's comfortable with that, you know, but in a day-to-day, you know, if I bump into somebody in the store, it doesn't even faze me typically because that's just normal. You know, having that extra contact that you're not meaning to is just, it's there.
Mm. Yeah. Nope. I get that.
Yeah. So I will ask you the same thing I ask everybody else. If you had one piece of advice to leave a listener with, or somebody going through a struggle, somebody wanting to start a hustle, what would it be?
Well, I'm a big proponent of weighing out your options, certainly, but looking into your heart and figuring out what motivates you and figuring out what is important to you, and then weighing that against how you view your time here on this earth. So if you're debating something, doing something, if you're on the fence about something, if you knew that tomorrow was the last day, what would you do, right? Because it could be. You know, tomorrow is never promised. I think I've learned that in multiple times and ways in my life. I don't know if we have time for a tangent, but I'll tell you why I think that.
We got all the time in the world.
Last July. And again, I've always been kind of this way, but it's been, maybe it's been about a year now, where I've really propelled my, or a year and a half now, I'm sorry, that where I've really kind of advanced this thinking about tomorrow's not promised, and this is not your practice life. So you should jump. You should take the chance. And the reason why that happened is because I just moved into a new house with my three children. It was 6 a.m. One random day in July. And my middle daughter, who's now 8, came into my bedroom and she was complaining of a stomach ache.
Okay.
And I thought, well, okay, that's kind of weird. Well, okay, just come on, just lay down here by mama because it's early and I don't really feel like getting up right now. So she lays down by me and she's still complaining. And then she gets up and she's like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm going to get sick. So I take her in there. And right as she's like getting sick, I hear my baby, who is now 4, but she was, you know, 3 at the time. I hear her kind of getting sick in her bedroom. And I remember thinking to myself, what in the hell? What are the chances that both my girls are throwing up at the same time? That's so weird. So I said, all right, sissy, you hang right here. I'm going to go in and see what's wrong with baby. So I go in there and she's just making these like guttural sounds.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, what in the hell? Well, as I'm like walking toward her, it feels like I can't get to her room. It's probably 10 feet away from where I'm. I just can't get there. It's like walking through molasses. And in my head, I think, fuck, there's something really wrong.
Yeah.
Like there is something really wrong. I don't know what it is, but I got to get these kids and I got to get the hell out of here. I get to her bed. Finally, feels like it takes me 5 minutes to get there. I pick her up and she's unconscious.
Whoa.
So I put her over my shoulder and now I'm like, I got to get these kids out of here. I go back to get my daughter who's in my bathroom. She is now face down on the bathroom floor, unconscious.
Holy cow.
So I didn't know what it was, but in my head, I just kept thinking, it's got to be carbon monoxide. It's got to be, you know? And so I pick her up. So I have one girl in each arm. They aren't the lightest. And I'm kind of walking out and I got to get my son still because I have 3 children.
Yeah.
And so luckily his room was kind of down the hallway a little bit. And so I yell at him, say, Sai, wake up. And luckily he wakes up and he's like, what's going on, mom? What's going on? And he's freaking out a little bit. He's the oldest. He's 10. I said, we got to get out of here. So I had the forethought to grab my phone and I get them down the stairs. Well, I'll never forget carrying my baby, my daughter, who's 8. I have to drag her down the stairs because I can't get them all down there. So I'm holding one. I'm dragging the other one by her arm down the stairs, unconscious. I drag them out of the house. I take them to the out to the driveway.
Yeah.
And I call 911. And we're just sitting out there at 6 a.m. My kids are in their jammies. Both of my girls aren't awake.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Freaking out. Called the ambulance. Talking with the 911 gal who luckily was trying to calm me down. But my middle daughter starts to kind of come to a little bit. My baby is still unconscious. So you can imagine your parent.
Yeah,
that's it was the
terrifying.
Longest 10 minutes of my life. She just wouldn't wake up. Like there was nothing I could do. I was crying. I was like trying to wake her up. As soon as I see the ambulance around my corner, she wakes up. She looks at me. She says, mama. And then she closes her eyes. But I'm like, all right. Oh. That's all I needed though. I mean, she's awake. She woke up. She said my name. I get him into the ambulance. They hook him up to oxygen. The cool thing about carbon monoxide, I mean, there's really no cool thing, but the cool thing is if you can get oxygen in your system, it kind of pumps out.
Flushes it.
Yeah. He took us to the hospital. We spent the whole day there. They had high levels. My levels were like double theirs because my bedroom was right above the garage. And luckily, we all survived with no... I had really bad headaches for the next few days, but we survived without anything else. It could have been disastrous
had my daughter not come in. That makes me absolutely sick to my stomach.
It was awful. Had my daughter not... We call her our little canary in the coal mine because had she not come in, yeah, we would have all slept right through it and we would have never woken up. We learned a lot from that. I had to put myself out there because my car was in the garage.
Oh.
So as a mom, how do you admit that, yeah, right? No, I didn't know that it was. I didn't think that it was. I had one of those push-button cars, okay, which since then people have contacted me and said, oh, yeah, my car started in the garage too, like, yeah, that. But I don't know. I can't say for certain. You know, I was pretty sure I'd shut it off because I brought it in and they had their bikes out. Regardless,
yeah,
the car was fucking going. You know?
I have a auto start, remote start on my truck.
Yeah.
And it's really sensitive.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I've had people approach me and go, I think your truck's running.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, shit, it is.
Yeah.
So, I can totally see how that can...
Well, and you have to, again, that comes from being authentic, right? Like,
yeah.
And I'm a pretty public person, and people asked me, like, how did that happen? And I, instead of, like, being defensive about it, I just decided I was going to swallow my pride and share my story and hope that other people could learn from it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. I was very open and said, you know, I'm a pretty responsible person who loves my children, and even I... You know, it could have been disastrous. So yeah, to learn from that experience, now I got a totally different car that I have to turn with an actual key and it's loud as hell. So that would never happen again. But that moment, the levels in our house were so high that we probably shouldn't have been able to wake up. So that moment to me, not only throughout my life, I've always kind of lived like a, you know, you got to live this life. But that moment to me solidified that tomorrow wasn't promised. So I guess that's a long way of answering your question, which is to say, if there's something that your heart wants to do, if there's something that you want to follow, if there's some desire that you want to investigate or go down that path, what is holding you back? I mean, there's always a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
When there's a will, there's a way. Give it a shot. What's the worst that could happen? You fail? All right. Well, at least you did it. So now, to me, regret is way worse than failure.
Absolutely.
So I'd encourage people to do that. Sometimes it's baby steps. Sometimes a jump to one person is two stories. A jump to another person is two steps. It's all relative. But I think putting yourself out there is typically worth it.
Yeah. Whatever it is, make that jump. Absolutely.
I talk a lot.
I love it. Stacey, thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you.